Check out Walter's Happy Hour across the street from Nationals Park. Options include $5 salmon sliders, Korean fried cauliflower and meatball trio, and yes, $5 fireball shots.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's a pitch that's taken outside for a ball by left-handed batting James Wood. Wood is 21 years old. He turned pro out of high school in Maryland. 5 out of 11 this spring with 2 homers and 4 RBIs. He hits that one hard, deep center field, sending Scott back to the wall, and that one is out of here. That's a home run for Wood, going back-to-back with Thomas off Kyle Gibson.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Wednesday, March 6, 2024, along with MassinSports.com Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. We now are about halfway through National Spring Training in West Palm Beach, Florida. Opening day is on March 28th, so 3 weeks from this Thursday, and we are coming to you with another one of our spring training episodes of the podcast as we prepare to do what we do during the regular season, an episode of the podcast for the morning after every Nats game day. Check out our website, natschatpodcast.com. Click on merch to view the great Nats Chat podcast t-shirts that you can buy. We appreciate the support very much. Also, Nats Chat is back on the radio for the 2024 season. Nats Chat is on the radio Sunday mornings 9 to 10 on ESPN Richmond, which is 106.1 FM in the Richmond, Virginia area, and ESPNRichmond.com. The first installment of Nats Chat on ESPN Richmond for this year will be Sunday, March 31st. But Mark, here we are, the Nats in their 2024 Grapefruit League season are 5-4. That doesn't matter. What does matter is how the potential building blocks are doing. And there is no potential Nats building block who is doing better than outfielder James Wood. He has become the story of Nats spring training so far. Your James Wood 2024 Grapefruit League season stats: 25 plate appearances, a batting average of .474, an on-base percentage of .600, a slugging percentage of .947. He is playing a lot. He is doing a lot. And man, it is feeling like him being on the Nats regular season opening day roster perhaps is not so far-fetched.
It's not impossible. You know, coming into this, I would have said there's no chance. At this point, and I think we are actually officially like right at the halfway point now of spring training, I think I would say there is a chance. You're telling me there is a chance. I don't think it's still a great chance. I think you still have to see him keep this up for the remainder of camp and start doing it against some more big league pitchers, which, you know, he will face along the way. But what he has done to this point is nothing short of remarkable, and it can't help but just make you feel really excited about what the potential there is and the potential for it to be happening soon, whether it's opening day or sometime later in the season. What stands out to me, two things. Number one, he is playing a ton. He's played every day, and he's been in the lineup, usually in a prominent spot in the lineup, several days along the way, which is not what you normally do with a prospect who is not in theory supposed to be part of your opening day lineup. So that's number one. But number two, yeah, the home runs he hit that first week were great. What's impressed me since then is the walks and the lack of strikeouts. The book on him was this guy strikes out a ton. That's his biggest, you know, obstacle towards becoming a big-time big leaguer. And again, it's a couple of weeks, and maybe he's not facing the kind of pitching and the type of pitches that he will see daily in the big leagues. But I've been really impressed with his ability to lay off pitches out of the zone, take his walks, and make contact when it is in the zone. And so you put that all together and you say, well, maybe he's not that far off. Maybe they will consider this. Now, we can get into what the ramifications are. It's a little different than it used to be when it comes to putting a top prospect on your opening day roster versus waiting a few weeks like they've done in the past, say with Bryce Harper. The new CBA has some different rules that I think are interesting to discuss on both sides of the equation, whether to do it and whether not to do it. But 3 weeks into this, it's certainly probably the topic of camp, and I think a worthy topic. I don't think it's out of the question for him to make the opening day roster.
And regarding him playing so much, I think that that is a key component of this. I mean, he has played in every game. He has by far the most plate appearances of any Nats player. He has 25 plate appearances. The second highest total is 17. It would seem that Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez are giving James Wood the opportunity to continue doing what he is doing. Mike Rizzo has said, hey, you know, we're going to let you sort of determine when you're ready to be called up, but we're not going to hold you back if you're showing us that you are ready. And what seems to be the case is that the Nats are giving James Wood the platform upon which he can demonstrate that he is ready to be a major league player. It's been a really cool thing to see. And, you know, I go back to what happened now two Tuesdays ago. So this would have been February 27th. It was a 10-3 exhibition win over the Houston Astros in West Palm. And the game ended up being like a festival of top Nats prospects killing it. You had James Wood as the starting right fielder, 1-for-3, a single and a walk. Dylan Cruz, the starting center fielder, 1-for-2, a great two-run hustle double, a stolen base, a diving catch. Robert Hassel III, starting left fielder, 1-for-3 with a two-run homer. Brady House came off the bench, played third base, 2-for-2, a solo homer and a single. And of course, it's one day. Of course, it's late February. It's a meaningless exhibition win, but it's a snapshot of what could be coming. And it was such an uplifting, exciting day. And there have been so few uplifting, exciting days for Nats fans since the team won the 2019 World Series. I thought that was such a great day. You hope like heck that it's an indication of what's to come, but it is nice to have this kind of stuff to sink our teeth into. This rebuild has taken time. This rebuild has been painful. The fact that the fruits of the rebuild could about to be consumed is a really cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. The last couple of years, we've had to sort of in our minds envision what the future might look like and the possibility of better days ahead. And you just have to, in your mind, think, well, someday maybe they'll have James Wood in the outfield and Robert Hassel and Brady House at third base and Cade Cavalli on the mound. And then they sign or draft Dylan Cruz and say he can be part of that. Well, it was all sort of theoretical. And what we've had this spring and that day in particular, because they all played together, you had in front of your own eyes, you could see it now. And it just looks more like reality. And now you can actually picture what this will be like in the big leagues someday soon. Interesting thing with Wood, to me, that could be in his favor here, is it's both about how he's playing, but also what is the competition there. And I think he's in a good spot in this regard. Stone Garrett, I don't think is going to be ready for opening day. They're not ruling that out yet, but he hasn't played in a game yet. My colleague Bobby Blanco watched him in a simulated game the other day, and you know, he took his at-bats and he ran the bases, but he noted that it didn't look like he was running the bases at full strength, that there's still something there that is holding him up. And that's understandable. I'm not saying anybody should be surprised by that. But if he's not ready for opening day, Jesse Winker, as a non-roster invitee, is, you know, in the mix for a left field job. Victor Robles, as we know, is kind of always on shaky ground in center field, although I think he's done a decent job here so far this spring. And then beyond that, you're talking about guys like Jacob Young and Alex Call, who we've seen before, and say what you want about them, but they're probably not, you know, stalwarts in the long-term future. So it would be one thing if all those positions were clogged up and you'd say, well, all right, there's no need to put James Wood on the opening day roster. But there's maybe a case we made that he is better positioned to make the team because of the state of those other guys than he would be otherwise. And I think that's something to consider and to watch here as we get through the second half of spring training. The other guy I'll mention here, Robert Hassel, I've been really impressed with him, and a lot of people have. Sort of the forgotten prospect of the group. What he's done I think he's showing that he can be the hitter they always thought that he would be at the time of the trade, with a healthy wrist and just kind of some mechanical changes, and just, I think, a little pressure off of him now that he's not really the guy that everybody's focused on anymore. I think that's been good for him. He looks like he could definitely be a part of this here at some point. And with Dylan Cruz, I don't want to say he's been overlooked, but it does feel like he's sort of the second story of this, or even the third story of this camp. Now, let's remember how inexperienced he is. First time in any spring training, let alone a big league camp. He's been in the lineup a couple times, but it's mostly coming off the bench. He's done nothing wrong, but he also hasn't stood out the way that Wood in particular, and even Hassel to some extent, has. And it's maybe a reminder that you do still need some professional experience sometime in the minor league. So nobody's saying that means that Dylan Cruz isn't going to be a great player, maybe the best of them all of this group. But it's a reminder that maybe he's not quite as close to being ready to make the big leagues as some might have hoped.
You know, there's another thing too with James Wood that is so exciting, and that is that he's so young. This coming season will be just his age 21 season. This is a guy who could come to the big leagues, be great, and by the time that it is time to pay him, you're still only talking about, you know, mid-20s. And so he's someone who could be with you for a decade plus and could be worthy of getting big money from you, you know, well into a second contract. So I think that's something too that stands out. So you mentioned the new rules per the new CBA when it comes to promoting prospects. There is what is called the PPI. PPI stands for Prospect Promotion Incentive. It's a little complicated. It's a little onerous. We don't have to necessarily cover every little aspect of it. But the basic idea of the PPI is you reward teams with draft picks if, in fact, the teams have highly regarded prospects brought up early in seasons and those prospects do well. So it's meant to incentivize teams to have guys up early in seasons as opposed to holding them back until that service time clock factor kicks in. So in other words, the Nats could have James Wood on the opening day regular season roster, but could end up getting rewarded with a draft pick if James Wood ends up having a really good rookie season. So yes, I guess in theory, you say you lose out in that you lose a year of service time, but you gain in that you gain a draft pick. You know, we're so early into the PPI era, it's hard to gauge truly how teams are going to handle this. But I do think that it's a really good idea, because in the past, it was basically an open and shut conversation. You wait until that service time clock date passes, you gain the extra year's control, and then you bring the guy up. And there really wasn't much arguing against that. Now, at least, there is a compelling argument for, hey, if a guy is doing as James Wood, at least so far, is doing, seemingly playing his way onto the opening day roster, you as a club feel like, okay, we can have him on the opening day roster, and it's not going to be something that ends up harming us.
Right. And let's also keep in mind, it's not just opening day. If you are called up later in the season, but you win Rookie of the Year or top three in MVP, that player now gets the full year of service time, even though they weren't on the big league roster all year long. So that's the calculation that you have to make if you're Mike Rizzo here, to say, even if we send him down, if he comes up and is just gangbusters, and you know, you can win Rookie of the Year without having been in the big leagues the whole year. We've seen it before. Guys with 4 months, even like 3 months at times, has been enough. So if you think the guy is going to be that good that you're not going to gain the extra year of service time, then you might as well have him up there and reap the benefits of what he can do, because you're not thinking 6 years down the road. You're thinking about right now. And as a reward for that, as you said, you get the compensatory draft pick the following year. But you're right, there's not a lot of track record with this new system to know how teams are going to figure out the best way to do it. I could see this going both ways. I could see teams saying, hey, let's go ahead, put them on the opening day roster. I could also see teams saying, hold off, we're going to wait till the All-Star break, because chances are that won't be enough for him to still win Rookie of the Year, and then we will gain that extra year of service time on the back end. I don't know how that's all going to play out. You hope that this is all just based on his readiness and nothing else, but I do think it's an interesting wrinkle that we haven't had to consider before.
Hey, Al Galdi here to tell you about Window Nation. March, a big month for the Nats, and March, a big month for windows. If your windows are cracked or leaking, won't open, won't stay open, Now is the time to get great new windows from Window Nation, which is offering a terrific deal for listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com and make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast. Window Nation windows come with a lifetime warranty. Window Nation can install your windows in a day or less. Take advantage of this offer. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. By the time that you start actually paying for your new Window Nation windows, James Wood and Dylan Cruz will be seasoned vets. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. And make sure that you tell Window Nation that Al Galdi sent you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Pitch is taken in there, called strike three. Fastball elevated toward the top of the zone, but Williams is called out. Strikeout number three for Rutledge in the second out here in the top of inning number five.
I want to ask you about the Nats rotation. We have not really talked about this yet. One of the things we got into late last season was, ideally, the Nats in 2024, their rotation could feature four of the five guys being young, up-and-coming pitchers, right? Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Jackson Rutledge. We presume Patrick Corbin is in the rotation last year of that contract, the last year in which we have to eat our vegetables, and then we're done eating our vegetables. But, you know, the hope was, hey, at least four of the five can be guys who you can really get excited about in terms of what could be coming for the Nats. Rutledge finally was called up to the majors last September, pitched in a handful of games. As things stand right now, do you think we are looking at a season opening rotation that will feature the four young guys, Gray, Gore, Irvin, and Rutledge, with Patrick Corbin in there too? Do you think that Trevor Williams still has a real chance of being in the opening day rotation? Where do you think we're at with that?
I think the odds are pretty slim that all of those young guys make the rotation for a few reasons there. I think in Rutledge's case in particular, they're going to want to watch his innings still and maybe have in a little more controlled environment at AAA to start the year. I think he could be the first one called up, and it may not be that long, maybe kind of like Jake Irvin was last year. I see him as someone that they're going to be a little more careful with and by putting him out there right away on opening day, you might be running the risk of his innings building up too much. And just, you know, I know he made the big leagues late last year, but it's still a little bit of a rush to get him there after all the injuries and stuff he had had in the past. So there's that. Trevor Williams, who's now in camp and made his first start and was sharp in that outing, they're still paying him $7 million. Now, maybe eventually that means he's a long reliever, but for them to go into the year and say, all right, you're already in the bullpen, we know they made it through last year with only 8 starters, which was remarkable. That's not going to happen again. Guys are going to get hurt. To me, it feels like they're more likely to say, let's put him in the rotation for now, knowing you can move him back to the bullpen at some point. It's a little harder to go the other way when you've done that, especially with a veteran like that. And then the other guy I want to mention here is Zach Davies, who we haven't talked about. And he's in camp on a minor league deal, a veteran. Was not good last year with the Diamondbacks, but has a decent track record over time. He's been making starts down here, kind of quietly in the mix. And I do wonder if, come the end of camp, if there's a fear of losing him. And again, you've got to be thinking not just in terms of who are our 5 starters, but who are the 9 or 10 starters you're going to need all year long. If you don't want to lose someone like that, and you're afraid he's not going to go to AAA, you maybe put him on the team either as a long reliever or as a 5th starter at the expense of somebody else with options like a Rutledge or maybe even a Jake Irvin for that matter. I could see them doing that as sort of trying to play the long game here and being less worried about who's in the rotation in April versus making sure they have as many available arms as possible for the whole season.
Wow, that would be disappointing. Jake Irvin was a real bright spot to last year. I get the roster maneuvering that you're talking about, but I mean, if you want to talk about rewarding guys for performance, I don't think that would go over very well if Jake Irvin was not in the regular season opening rotation. I mean, he earned a spot with what he did last season.
I agree 100%. I've heard a lot from people with the team. They keep bringing up this idea of, yeah, we made it through last year with 8 starters. That was great. Well, that's not going to happen again. They know that's not going to be the case. They want to make sure they have as many viable arms as possible. The other thing Davey has brought up, that maybe not to start the year because they have a lot of off days, but at some point along the way, he thinks that they may go to a 6-man rotation like they did late last season. So that changes the dynamics a little bit too and opens the door for one of those younger guys potentially to be in there. Then we haven't talked about Cade Cavalli, who is on track. Everything's good as far as we can tell for sometime in June. I think, like with the lineup, there's going to be a lot of people hoping to see a lot of young guys at the start of the year and just understand it's going to be the second half of the year is really the team that they want to have. I kind of feel the same way about the rotation. Just because it's not there on opening day doesn't mean over the course of the season, you won't get to see that young rotation that everybody hopes to see.
Yeah, it would be great if come July or August, September, we had Gray, Gore, Irvin, Cavalli, Rutledge. That was your rotation, you know, and Williams and Corbin, you know, go to the bullpen or whatever. Like, that would be awesome to have those 5 guys make up your rotation. Obviously, health will have something to say about that. Speaking of health, Cole Henry, it was in August 2022 that we learned that Cole Henry would be undergoing surgery for thoracic outlet syndrome, a brutal blow to a guy who had been rising. It was in June 2022 that the Nats had promoted Henry from AA Harrisburg to AAA Rochester. Nats took Henry in the 2nd round of the 2020 MLB draft out of LSU. Now, the good news with Henry having TOS was that, hey, younger, so in theory, maybe he can be one of the guys who comes back from this and has a career. This upcoming season will be Cole Henry's age 24 season. I know so far in exhibition play, he has been used out of the bullpen. He's been used as a reliever, not as a starter. I don't think anyone anticipates him being at the major league level to begin the season. But how is Cole Henry doing?
Everyone here has been really impressed with him. Number one, that he's healthy, given what he went through. And let's be clear, I know people hear thoracic outlet surgery and they think Steven Strasburg and career-ending stuff. This is a little different, both because, like you said, he was younger, but also there's a couple different types of the surgery. Strasburg had the nerve one. Cole Henry, I believe, had the circulatory one. So it's a little bit different circumstances for his. And it was kind of done preventatively, if that's a word, before things got out of hand. And he was back throwing pretty shortly after that, you know, relatively speaking. And he's throwing 97 again down here. This guy's got a great arm. Now, he's behind the 8-ball in terms of experience, obviously, and stamina and all those other things. But they really do like what they've seen and somebody to watch in the future. I think the question with him, He's got the stuff that makes them think he could be a big league starter. But I think there is also some concern that either because of his arm or if the back half of his repertoire is maybe not up to snuff and he's more of a 2-3 pitch guy instead of a 3-4 pitch guy, if they would look at him as a reliever eventually. Now, I don't think it's going to happen yet. I think they want him to start in the minor leagues to begin the year and be one of those guys they could call upon when they need starters. But I have heard some chatter from people with the team to suggest that his eventual path may be as a very hard-throwing late-inning reliever for them.
It's interesting with the Nats, we know about the position playing prospects. MLB Pipeline on Monday came out with the Nats' top 30 prospects in the organization. And you look at the list, 8 of the top 9 are position players. The only pitcher in that mix, Cade Cavalli at number 4. And then the pitchers who start coming up are guys in the lower levels of the minors, like Harlene Susano. So as we have discussed, you very much need the Grays and the Gores and the Irvins and the Rutledges and the Cavallis to pan out here, or at least, you know, the majority of those guys to pan out here, because if they don't, there isn't like this immediate next wave of young pitchers coming up. With the position players, you have that. With the pitchers, you really don't.
And again, that's why I bring up names like Zach Davies, and whatever you think about Patrick Corbin and Trevor Williams, they're going to give you some innings that somebody has to take over the course of a season. So I think they're very mindful of that. They know that they don't have, you know, other than Cavalli, when he comes back, they don't really have that big name guy that's going to step in and change the whole dynamic of the rotation. Let's talk about Gore and Gray, though, here real quick. They've both looked really good this spring. Limited sample, only a handful of innings, but they look exceptional. Josiah Gray is throwing fastballs for strikes and getting swings and misses off of them. And that's always been his biggest, you know, issue. Was the fastball good enough? He's been focusing on it and facing big league hitters, getting them to swing and miss and really hitting his mark with those pitches. He's got that condensed windup, if you even want to call it that, that he used at the very end of last year when he had that strong finish to the season. He feels like that's helped simplify things, allow him to repeat his mechanics and have better fastball command. That's been really encouraging. And Mackenzie Gore has just been bam, 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 real quick innings, very efficient, which we know for him is such a big deal. He can't let the pitch count get up there. They are extremely encouraged about those two. And there's such an interesting dynamic to this team. You've still got these handful of veterans that they need for the moment, but there is this group of young building blocks that you can see taking over. You know, we don't know who's going to start opening day yet. I really hope it's one of the two. I hope it's Josiah Gray. I think he's earned that over Patrick Corbin. But no matter who starts that first day, I really do believe we're talking about a rotation this year led by Mackenzie Gore and Josiah Gray, not the other way around.
And that, of course, is how it should be. You know, that mantra that Mike Rizzo has been espousing, I don't care how fast you throw ball four. I mean, I know it's just a mantra and it's kind of a cute, funny thing, but there obviously is legitimacy to it. And, you know, that has been an issue with this staff. And as like funny as it may be, as haha as it may be, I wonder if it does make an impact on these guys of Rizzo saying, you know, like, let's understand what the plan here is and let's understand what the purpose here is. Keep your eyes on the prize, as the saying goes. So I don't know that that's such a gimmicky thing. Like, I think that there actually could be some impact from that.
It's 100% right. He didn't just do that to try to make some kind of bold statement that would get headlines. Like, it's not like he's the first to tell the pitchers throw strikes, but he wanted them to know, hey, the pitching coach can tell you this, the manager can tell you this, but at the end of the day, who's the guy deciding who's on the team or not? It's the GM. And I want you, every time you're in the bullpen, to see that and remind yourself, this is about throwing strikes and throwing quality strikes. Let's remind the people who don't like that sign and say, oh, he just wants them to, you know, throw 90 mile an hour right over the plate and get whacked. No, he wants good quality strikes. He wants them to get ahead in the count and work ahead in the count. I do think guys have taken that message to heart. I do think it is an important message. And one other thing I'll mention here that a lot of people have brought up this camp is Sean Doolittle and the role that he's playing in helping the pitching staff. This has been universally well received. Sean as the new pitching strategist, this isn't some ceremonial position. He is really there every day working intently with these guys on helping decipher the numbers of the analytics that they have for all their pitchers and helping them understand what it means in a practical sense for a guy actually on the mound. They've all really appreciated it. He is all in on this. And one person with the team said to me, like, not jokingly, that's the biggest acquisition we made this offseason, Sean Doolittle as the pitching strategist. Not they made a lot of acquisitions to begin with, but like that bringing him in into this role, they think is going to make a big difference.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd argue that's bigger than Juan Yepes, okay? But we can have that conversation off the air. But yeah, it was on January 16th that the Nats announced the hiring of Sean Doolittle as pitching strategist to, quote, serve as a liaison between the analytics department and pitching staff while assisting the manager and pitching coach with strategy, mental preparation, and mechanics, end quote. And I think one thing that we have seen in MLB, you know, with this infusion of analytics is that, okay, it's one thing to have a bunch of brainiacs in the front office, but how do you translate that intel to your players? And a guy like Doolittle carries with him credibility, right? Because of what he did as a player. And so, you know, it's one thing if a 22-year-old fresh out of Harvard is telling you a bunch of stuff as a player, but if a Sean Doolittle is telling you that stuff, the stuff carries more weight. You know, I'm not saying that that necessarily should be the case, but that is the case. And so you have to be real about this stuff. And so I think a messenger like Doolittle here can do a lot of good. To say nothing of, you know, Sean Doolittle, smart guy, went to UVA. You know him well. We've had him on the show. You know, he clearly has a brain in his head. Like, he thinks well. He understands, I think, a lot of this modern stuff with baseball. So that was, I think, a smart move.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thompson sets, runners first and third, two outs. The kick of the 2-2 pitch is right in there. Strike three called. Mookie Betts looks at a fastball and the inning is over.
We have had some bad news with the Nats over the last week or so. Mason Thompson, it turns out that he did need to undergo Tommy John surgery. He underwent that this past Friday, March 1st. He had been out due to right elbow discomfort. Second Tommy John surgery for Mason Thompson. The first one happened during his time in high school. Look, we've talked about Mason Thompson a good bit over the life of this podcast. Talented guy. He, at times, has been really good for the Nats, but he has been inconsistent, and he has dealt with a good bit of injury. And obviously, this now is another injury blow. A guy who the Nats got in their 2021 fire sale. It was in the early morning hours of Friday, July 30th, 2021, that the Nats traded reliever Daniel Hudson to the San Diego Padres for Mason Thompson and infielder Jordy Barley. I think pretty clearly the Nats were anticipating this news with Mason Thompson, have signed a bunch of relievers to minor league contracts here in recent weeks. But of course, a tough break for Mason Thompson.
Yeah, he kind of seemed to know it right from the start when he first felt his elbow. I think he even admitted in the end that it was a pop in the elbow. So he kind of knew. And he'd been through it before, having had Tommy John surgery in high school. So the news isn't a huge surprise. But it's disappointing, obviously. And, you know, two Tommy John surgeries is never good for anybody. Although I guess in this case, you say a couple things. He's still young. He's only 26 years old. The previous one is like a decade ago. So it's not like he had these back to back. And I think nowadays it's maybe you hear about more guys coming back from a second Tommy John surgery and still having a career, as opposed to in the past, that was kind of the death sentence for a pitcher. So there's still hope, but it's going to be a while. Obviously, you're talking about next year, maybe not even to start the year, but later in the year for him. You're right. The moves they've made to bring in several veteran relievers on minor league deals, including Matt Barnes is the latest one that they brought in. These are moves, I think, made with the Thompson injury in mind, and also, again, knowing what else they're dealing with from a pitching standpoint. We're not there yet, but I think there's going to be some really interesting questions at the end of camp as far as who makes the bullpen and who doesn't. You hope this is the case. We'll see. But there's a good chance they're going to have more than eight qualified relievers for the bullpen on the opening day. And you're going to have to make some calculated decisions because, again, these veterans usually have opt-outs at the end of spring if they don't make a team. Are they willing to go to AAA if they don't make it, or are they going to become free agents? And they may have some tough decisions to make there as far as who they think, not just has had the best spring, but who's had the track record to suggest they can continue to be effective for you over a whole season.
As we think about what the A bullpen will be, what the B bullpen will be, of course, the performances will determine that. So like who we view as an A reliever may not be an A reliever as the season goes on. But just as things stand right now, Finnegan, Rainey, Harvey, Jose A. Ferrer, Jordan Weems did do some good things late last season. What do you think Davey Martinez is thinking right now in terms of his A bullpen, at least to begin the season?
It starts with Finnegan and Harvey, of course. But I think after that, I think they really do hope that Tanner Rainey returns to be that guy. Now, they're going to be careful with him because of, you know, his own coming back from Tommy John, and they're not going to, you know, push that harder than they really want to. But I think they feel like he can be in that mix as far as like helping pitch the seventh inning. I think Dylan Floro, who did miss a little bit of time here with a shoulder issue, he's downplayed it. We'll see. He hasn't come back to pitch in a game yet, but he has been throwing. I don't think they're concerned there, but it is somebody to keep an eye on. But again, he should be a late inning guy. Weems did do a good job for them, stepped up a lot last year, I think, in that regard. The guy that Davey keeps bringing up is Robert Garcia among the left-handers, who pitched pretty well at times late last season. I think Ferrer, maybe long-term they like, but in the short term, they're not sure. It's kind of inconsistent. But then this group of veterans that is in camp, and that's Matt Barnes, it's Derek Law, Richard Blyers had a good camp. I think they're looking at all those guys as potentially making it, and there may not be room for them all. And so you have to decide which ones make the most sense. But I think the biggest thing they did with these moves, you just talked about the A bullpen and the B bullpen. I think they would love for there to be less delineation between those two this year. Obviously, you have your top guys who pitched at the end of games, but they would love to not have to separate it into two groups and have more guys who you could consider A minus relievers, let's call them, to be used in late inning situations when you need to give, say, a Hunter Harvey or Tanner Rainey a day off. I think that's the goal here. We'll see how it all plays out, but there's potential here, potential for this to be a very deep bullpen, way more than they've had in the past.
Yeah. You know, it's just we've danced this dance like every year, right? The bullpen is this perpetual issue with this team. It's been like the Achilles heel for Mike Rizzo in terms of building up this team at the major league level. And even like last season for a while, it felt like, hey, this bullpen's pretty good. And then all of a sudden you looked up and the numbers were horrible and the bullpen was in a real rut. So we know how it can go. But yeah, I mean, there does seem to be depth. There does seem to be talent. And you know, especially if a guy like Finnegan is more of the good Finnegan than the bad Finnegan. Hunter Harvey is healthy. We know how good he can be when he is healthy. You very much could have a halfway decent bullpen. I know defense is difficult to judge. I do know that it has been a big time emphasis for the Nats in camp. From what you have seen, are you seeing better defense? I mean, of course, it's not until the regular season that we'll really be able to tell, but are there signs that this team actually might be decent defensively this coming season?
I think it depends who you're talking about individually. It's kind of different depending on who it is. I do think first base is going to be noticeably worse without Dom Smith there. And there are reasons that they got rid of him. And, you know, we'll see. But Joey Meneses and Joey Gallo, who's gotten most of his work at first base, actually, Gallo's better, but it's not quite the same. And you do hope that that doesn't hurt the rest of the infield too much, but you got to keep an eye on that. CJ Abrams has looked very good at shortstop. Nick Senzel's looked fine at third. I wouldn't say it stood out one way or the other how he's done. Luis Garcia kind of looks the same to me at second base, which I think is a problem. This is a guy to watch as we move forward here. I think he's on the team to start the season, but that's a tenuous hold on that position, and defense is a big part of it there. The catchers, it's been really interesting watching. They're all working from one knee now, try to get lower to frame better. Hopefully not at the expense of throwing out runners. I've seen some good throws from Keibert Ruiz. The numbers haven't shown that he's thrown out a lot of guys, but the form looks a little better. So I'm interested in that. Victor Robles had that one like kind of like ugly play the first day of spring training games. And then since then, I think he's been fine. But I will tell you, I've been impressed with the kids in the field. Dylan Cruz in center field has been very good. James Wood has played all over, and he doesn't look like it because he's 6'7" with such long legs, but he moves really fast like a gazelle out there with these long strides. That's going to be something to watch whenever he makes it. And the other guy to watch, I mentioned Garcia earlier, Trey Lipscomb. another one of those prospects. He's not in that top tier of prospects, but kind of that second tier. Plays all over the infield. He's played a lot of second base this spring. I've been impressed with the work he does there, especially turning double plays. It's kind of been eye-popping a little bit. I don't think he's opening day ready. He still needs some experience in the minors, but I'm very interested to see where he starts the year and at what position. They talk about him playing all four infield positions. If they have him playing second base every day, say at AAA to start the year, that to me is a sign that they see him pushing Garcia for the job the moment that Luis starts to struggle. And that's something I would keep an eye on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, we know that the organization, as last season went on, was falling out of love with Luis Garcia. And so if he is struggling and he does get off to a bad start, who would be the replacement? But it sounds like Trey Lipscomb could be that guy. I know Brady House, the idea is third base. Yo-Yo Morales, third base. Do you think they would move Morales to second base if, you know, House ends up being what they want to be?
I think first base more like a Yo-Yo's a big guy. I don't know that he can play the middle infield, but I think third base, first base is what they're looking at there. He's gotten into a couple of games late at the end of games. We haven't really seen a lot of him in terms of in the field, but he's a big physical presence and a guy who, look, he just came out of college, you know, and he's barely had any minor league experience, but he made it all the way to double A by the end of the year. My guess is he would restart there. And now if he and Brady House are together on the same team to start the year at double A, that'll be very interesting. Who's playing what position? House is third base. They're not talking about him shortstop anywhere else at this point. So do you see Yo-Yo play first base, DH, or does he split time at third with House? I'm not sure the answer to that. But if he ends up somewhere else, I think first base is the spot. But I think they still want to use him at third base, not knowing for sure what Brady House is going to be. You hope that he is everything you want him to be, offensively and defensively, but you don't really know that for sure yet.
Yeah, Yo-Yo Morales, one of the great nicknames in baseball right now. Yohandy Morales, Nats took him in the second round of the 2023 draft out of Miami. Got promoted last August, got promoted from low A Fredericksburg to high A Wilmington. Well, Mark, I'm very proud of what we have done here on this episode of the podcast. Zero mention until now of Steven Strasburg. Zero mention until now of the learners. We did not have a Strasburg discussion. We did not have an ownership discussion. It was nice to talk baseball on an episode of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good news, or I suppose you want to look at it that way, is there was no news to discuss in those other realms over the last week. There's been a lot of baseball to watch. It's been fun. I got to tell you, it's been a different energy in this camp. There is an enthusiasm there, an optimism that hasn't been there in a few years. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is what it's going to look like in April. It may be a while. And I think that maybe the toughest part of this is this idea of we may have to break this season into two parts. The first part of the season when it's still some veterans out there, and the second part of the season when the prospects take over. But for the first time in a while, there is some genuine enthusiasm, some buzz around camp. You're even hearing some national media pick up on what James Wood and Dylan Cruz and the like are doing. And that's a nice thing to see because there's been very little attention outside of DC on this team in several years.
Nats fans have earned the good vibes. So enjoy the good vibes and we hope that they continue to come. You tell us what you think. You can hit us up on X at Nats_chat. You can email the show natschatpodcast@gmail.com. And like I said earlier, we invite you to check out our website, natschatpodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.
Trey Lipscomb out of the University of Tennessee. 6-for-16 this spring with a double. Swinging a line drive, a base hit to right field. To second is Morales picking up third base coach Ricky Gutierrez, who tells him to stop right there. And so runners on first and second, and Elijah Green will get his first at bat in Grapefruit League play.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.